Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at the fundamental root causes of the conflict in Darfur, the western region of the Republic of the Sudan. We'll also discuss and analyze the role of the Darfur Women Action Group based here in Washington, D.C. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, October 19th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion and analysis on the root causes and the possible solutions on the conflict in the Western Sudanese region of Darfur.
So many angles to cover coming up later in our SCA inbox. We'll share your thoughts on today's topic through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
The Sudanese western region of Darfur continues to be an extremely dangerous place. This despite a large UN peacekeeping force presence. My colleague Paul Ndiho has more on this story.
Sudan's Darfur region is again in the international headlines because the regime in Khartoum is desperate to end one of the three rebellions in the country. Conflicts that have caused a major humanitarian crisis and, according to the United Nations estimates, caused more than 300,000 deaths. The UN also says that 2.7 million people are displaced as a result of the conflict.
In Darfur, we continue to save lives and help keep peace under difficult conditions. Our success demands the cooperation and full support of the international community, the parties on the ground, and the Sudanese government.
The Washington, D.C.-based NGO Darfur Women Action Group, founded in 2009 by a Darfuri genocide survivor, is trying to make a difference by amplifying the voices and empowering the affected communities. In September, Amnesty International accused the Sudanese government of carrying out at least 30 chemical weapons attacks in Darfur since the beginning of this year. Terina Hassan, Amnesty International's Director of Crisis Research, estimated that up to 250 people might have died as a result of exposure to the chemical weapons agents.
During these attacks, you know, hundreds of civilians have been shot at, tens of thousands have been displaced, and in one of the most sickening twists in the conflict in Darfur is we have discovered credible evidence that the Sudanese government has been using chemical weapons on the civilian population.
Hassan says her team used satellite imagery, conducted more than 200 interviews, and obtained expert analysis of images showing injuries. The Sudanese government has refuted these claims made by displaced persons in a Jabal Mara area of Darfur, that they suffered chemical exposure at the hands of the government. A joint African Union-United Nations force known as UNAMID has been stationed in Darfur since 2007. Security remains fragile in Darfur, where mainly non-Arab tribes have been fighting the Arab-led government in Khartoum, and the government is struggling to control rural areas. Meanwhile, Sudan's National Dialogue Conference held last week approved a final document that will act as the base for the country's permanent constitution, aimed at ending the conflicts. Representatives of political parties, armed groups, and civil society organizations signed the document before it was handed over to the Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir.
I declare here that we will strictly follow this document and exert zero tolerance over the acts that damage our political development.
However, the main opposition political parties and Darfur armed groups, including SPLM Northern, refused to participate in the conference. The International Criminal Court issued two arrest warrants against President al-Bashir in 2009 and in 2010 for allegedly war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide committed in Darfur. However, he continues to travel freely in Africa, across Arab countries and Asia, defying the ICC's arrest warrants. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us here in our Washington studios is our distinguished guest, Nimmat Ahmad, founder and president of the Darfur Women Action Group, based here in Washington, D.C. We invited the Sudanese ambassador to the United States to provide the government's position, but due to circumstances beyond his control, he could not join us. Well, Nimmat, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
Thank you, and I'm equally honored to be with you in the studio today.
You're most welcome, ma'am.
Thank you.
Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately. Well, you do have a large presence of a UN peacekeeping force, correct, in Darfur. So how come the place remains extremely dangerous?
Well, the question about the peacekeeping mission in Darfur, the Joint African Union United Nations peacekeeping mission, have been deployed since 2007, and they were about 27,000 troops. Unfortunately, the troop has not been able to provide protection or implement their mandate that they have been tasked to do. And this is basically because of the government obstruction by the government of Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of protecting the people that they were there to protect, they are unable even to protect themselves. And the attack continued even against the joint forces.
So if what you're saying is true, then what is the justification for them to remain in Darfur?
Well, I think for them to remain, they have to show that they are willing and able to fulfill their mandate.
Mm-hmm.
And this has a lot to do with their leadership, particularly at the national level, at the level of Sudan, the commander-in-chief of the forces. They have been biased, not neutral, and listening to the government of Sudan. So I appreciate that the forces have sacrificed a lot at the level of the soldiers, but their leadership have not authorized them to fight back when they are under attack, let alone protecting the people on the ground. So in order for them to remain, we appreciate that they are there, but the challenge is, to be there, they have to do their job. And to do their job is to fulfill their mandate, protect the people, providing patrol, and fighting back, protect their own troops when they are under attack.
What about the fact that the government in Khartoum, in fact, is on record saying that it fully cooperates with the UN peacekeeping force in Darfur?
Well, that's not true. And in many instances, if you today look at the UNAMID report to the Secretary General, all the report has been bringing forward concern about restriction by the government of Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
And the example of the recent attack in Jabal Mara, until today, the peacekeeping mission has not been able to go investigate the atrocities that have been committed by the government of Sudan military.
Mm-hmm.
And the government of Sudan has declared Jabal Mara as a no-go area. And there are reports from our people on the ground that in many cases of attacks, when the joint peacekeeping mission operation wanted to go, they have to receive a permission from the government of Sudan. They are faced with rejection or either taking long time to approve their trip. By that time, the government of Sudan will take the opportunity to clear the evidence of the attack. When they arrive there, they either underreported or they have nothing to say about what happened. So this is pretty evident in all the reports, and also it has been witnessed by people on the ground. And if today you ask the troops themselves, they can tell. And another evidence is that 2 years ago, the former spokesperson for UNAMID, Aisha Al-Basri, she have been part of this peacekeeping mission as a spokesperson, and she herself has witnessed the cover-up by the mission. They are covering up in the attack committed by the government of Sudan. In most cases, they are undermining the number of people killed and not reporting on assault and sexual violence committed against women, such as rape. And in most cases, the report has to go through the government of Sudan to cut whatever they don't like in the report, and then after that, be sent. So she has to resign her job, sacrificing her job to tell the truth about what she has seen, and she refused to be part of being an accomplice. So these are clear evidence, and she is available to speak at any time.
What does she know?
As of now, I'm not quite sure where she, but she is between United States and other countries.
I wish you had told me that earlier, because we would obviously have invited her to come to this panel. Let me ask you this question, Nimad. You know as well as I do that the United Nations Security Council is responsible for peace and security throughout the world. And obviously, in this particular case, it should be responsible for what is happening or not happening in Darfur. What would you like the UN Security Council to do in that region that is not doing so far?
Well, I cannot agree with you more that the primary responsibility, as in the case of Darfur, is under the UN Security Council. And the UN Security Council, unfortunately, they have authorized so many resolutions on Darfur, but because of the obstruction by the government of Sudan, those resolutions have not been implemented, including the failure of the peacekeeping mission right now. So what I want to see the UN Security Council doing is that not allowing Omar al-Bashir undermine their authority. This council needs to show that they have the authority, and their authority should not be undermined by someone who is not providing protection but killing his own people. So it is their responsibility to ensure that the peacekeeping mission is operating effectively, protecting civilians. It is the UN Security Council responsibility to hold the perpetrator and the accomplice accountable. And it is their responsibility to ensure that humanitarian aid is reaching the needy. Because in the case of Darfur, they have been negotiating the access. When people are dying, I don't think it is appropriate for a powerful organization like the UN Security Council to negotiate whether they can take access to people before they die or after they are all being killed or starved to death.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they need to meet their word with action to fulfill those resolutions and accept and show us that this council can meet its commitment and their responsibilities.
So if I heard you correctly, what you are saying here really is that the UN Security Council has the teeth, but these teeth do not bite?
Yes, exactly. They have the leverage, they have the capability, they have the responsibility to do it, but they're not doing it. So we want our people to be able to hold this council accountable. And we all are a member of the international community, part of that world community. And the UN Security Council is accountable to us as individuals, as institutions, and as people. And we need to hear more people speaking up and holding the council accountable, and also speaking to individual states. Sometimes there are states who want to take leadership role, and there are some other states who backtrack and try to sideline with al-Bashir or try to do like some sort of giving Bashir comfort by not implementing what the council is supposed to be doing.
I see. Now we'll pause for a short break, and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA blog, and we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me continue with the response or lack of response from the international community. Let's go to the United States. It has a special envoy by the name, of course, Ambassador Donald Booth, who assumed office on August 28, 2013. What is your report card on Ambassador Booth?
Well, unfortunately, the ambassador, since his appointment, has not been able to go to Sudan and to go to Darfur until recently. And given the fact that this has been going on for 13 years and the magnitude of the crisis and its impact on the people, the behavior of the government of Sudan, and the role of United States as a leading country among the international community, I think they have done too little, too late.
Really?
Yes.
And of course, as you know, it happens to be one of the 5 permanent members of the Security Council, even more, perhaps one of the most influential member of the Security Council.
Of course. So when a country like United States take a soft approach to a situation like what has been going on in Darfur, that will send the wrong signal to the government of Sudan that it is okay to do. It is okay to undermine the authority of this council if among the most powerful members of the council, people are silent or looking the other way. That means it is okay for the government of Sudan. And of course, the government of Sudan has been emboldened because of the soft approach has been taken by the Obama administration, the Department of the State. And then they continue to obstruct any attempt to end the violence and bring peace to Darfur or Sudan at large.
Now, Nimmat, wait a minute. What do you mean exactly when you say that the United States, for example, has been taking a very soft approach? What exactly do you mean? What would you like to see the United States actually doing right now?
Well, the taking a soft approach, like when there are attack or horrible incidents like this, in most cases, sometimes the U.S. action is not going beyond some word of condemnation. They have not taken a step toward telling Sudan that you need to stop attacking your civilians. You will be held accountable. And for example, in the recent visit, and the only visit by the U.S. Special Envoy Donald Booth to Darfur, he visited and he had the chance to meet with internally displaced people from the area of Jabal Marra. And because these people have met with him and talked to him, 15 people have been arrested. And some of them have been released, but some of them are still under detention, have been facing torture, and the U.S. has not shown any strong position toward even asking the government of Sudan to release these people. And the Sudan government have done this also to show that they can undermine the leadership of the United States. So I think the U.S. need to step up more leadership. they need to do the right thing by taking a strong position when people are dying in masses. This is a systematic attack on people because of who they are. This is a genocide that has been declared from 2004 until today. Things has not changed. The pattern of the attack are very systematic. The same people who have been targeted in the beginning until they are the same people who are still systematically killing. The government has also used rape as a weapon of war.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2014, there was a shocking incident of rape of over 221 women and girls in one night by the government military, which is not far away from UNAMID base. And we didn't see any attempt from the U.S. to hold Sudan accountable as the leading members of the international community, but also their role as part of the at the member state of the U.N. Security Council. And that's kind of very disappointing and dismaying to us as a victims and advocate. And also, we are a U.S. citizen. This is our government. We would love to see our government taking more leadership and showing its people that they are doing the right things when the call is directed toward them.
Those are very, various charges, Nimat. Do you have any incontrovertible evidence on that?
The evidence, unfortunately, recently, you may have seen the report by Amnesty International that the government of Sudan has used chemical weapon. The same week, after a week from the bombing in the area of Jabal Mora, the United States has declared that the U.S. welcomes collaboration with Sudan in the counterterrorism fight.
Mm-hmm.
And collaborating with a country like Sudan, that means giving them a green light to continue with what they have been doing, because when they were listed in the terrorist-sponsored countries, which is true, they are, then they know that they are accountable, they know that they are isolated, but now that they are welcome and the U.S. is collaborating with them, then why should they care? Like, the U.S. is the most powerful government in the world, then that means they have a green light to continue to do what they do, as long as they can do one little thing that the U.S. will be happy about them, which is very unfortunate.
I gather from some sources that the United States, in fact, may be in a process of possibly lifting sanctions on Sudan. Have you heard anything in that direction?
I did. I heard that. And recently there was a visit by a Sudan government official from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and some of the business leaders who met with a U.S. official here and talk about finding a way to go around sanctions. And lifting sanctions in Sudan will never, ever benefit the people of Sudan, particularly those who are going through crisis and targeted by the current conflict. It will benefit the government of Sudan. And the more Sudan get opportunity to conduct business, they will gain more money and will buy weapons. This is the regime that continue to use every effort to destroy its own people. So I think by lifting sanctions, it's enabling the government of Sudan to continue its systematic genocide. Because this takes money, it takes training, it takes weapons for them to continue to kill people. And evidence is we have over 3 million people living in the camp for more than 12 years. Refugees, Sudanese, that 40 refugees are everywhere in the neighboring countries. You can name it. So it is evident that the situation is horrible and people are forced to leave, but there are people who are not even strong enough to leave.
You know, you keep using, of course, the word genocide.
Yes.
You realize that it is perhaps the Bush administration in the world, really, which came to, at least to the understanding of using that concept. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned that the rest of the world looks at what is going on in Darfur differently from the Bush administration, for example?
Well, I am extremely concerned. And it is not the rest of the world, but also it is our U.S. government. Obama, when was running for his 2000 election, have said that...
2008?
2008.
Yes.
That if he is elected, he would not turn his back on a situation like Darfur. And he said the situation like in Darfur will be a stain in our soul.
Mm-hmm.
When he is elected and he's in office, he has never used the word genocide for Darfur. But to me, as a survivor and the witness, what has been going on is genocide. There is nothing but genocide. And it is very systematic. And when people stop, the reason Darfur has been prolonged and the suffering continued because of people start shifting the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And changing the narrative is as damaging as those who are killing the people. When you change the narrative, when you change the term, call it conflict, there is a huge difference between the conflict and between genocide. And when you change it, that means you will have to struggle so much to pursue accountability, to hold the criminal accountable. And also, it is damaging to those people who are surviving these attacks, not to those, forget about those who are losing their life every day. So I think it is the responsibility that we use our word carefully, and you have to name the phenomena as it is. When Raphael Lemkin defined genocide, and the definition of genocide by Raphael Lemkin is very applicable to the case of Darfur. It's not just President Bush has declared it, but also this same UN Security Council that the United States is a member state of has unanimously referred the case of Darfur to the International Criminal Court with other members of the council. The International Criminal Court has investigated and confirmed that genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity have been committed against the people of Darfur. And as you said, there are two arrests, one with 10 counts of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity against President al-Bashir. So there is no way around. It is quite clear that it is a genocide, and avoiding not to talking about it, one of the main reasons that the crisis continued, the suffering continued in Darfur, is that change of the narrative. When the narrative changed, the media get less interested, there is no media coverage. Then the international community and the people who are living away, like the American people who have mobilized behind Darfur, other international citizens who have mobilized, when they don't see Darfur in the news, when their political leaders use different words, they think it has been resolved. It may have been over, like ended. So because of that, the interest get less and less in Darfur. There is less media coverage. And when Darfur is not in the news, then the government of Sudan will continue to do what they have been doing, and they know that they will get away with murder because no one is talking about it. No one is concerned about it.
You know that when we talk about genocide, we have to single out at least a group, a specific group that is being targeted. We are not talking about a religious group here because the people in Darfur, I gather, are about 100% Muslim, just like those in Khartoum, of course, who form the government. We do have three major ethnic communities there, the Zagawa, the Fol. I gather you come from that particular ethnic community, and you have the Masarita and a lot of other smaller groups. Who specifically is being targeted here when we talk about genocide? Is it all of the above?
Yes. It is a systematic target against these three major tribes, the indigenous African people, in Darfur. It is very systematic. If today you are traveling in Darfur, the Arab militias, the Janjaweed and the Rebid support forces will tell people to stop, and they ask them by their tribe. If you are identified with those who are targeted, they will pick you and kill you or beat you and abduct you. If you are identified with other tribe, you will be left to go. And if you look at the targeted villages in Darfur, there are villages, there is a difference between this village and the other village about a couple of kilometers. So they even targeting village based on the tribal basis. So there are villages that they are still there. No one asked them. They have not been attacked because they are not from those tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And not even just in Darfur, within Khartoum, the capital, as of today, in the last 4 years, there has been systematic targeting to Darfuri students from those tribes. If you come from Darfur, but you are an Arab,
mm-hmm.
you are permitted to live your life as anyone.
We'll come to a little bit more on that later. Okay. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, but first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders. They are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiyuwat, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. In case you've just joined us, the Darfur Women Action Group is an anti-atrocities nonprofit organization which was founded in 2009 by a Darfuri genocide survivor to amplify the voices and empower the affected communities. The group also provides a platform for interested stakeholders to work on advancing its unique goals. Well, this brings us to our question of the week, asking, what role would you like to see the Darfur Women Action Group take in seeking peace in Darfur? Well, starting off the conversation is a listener from Uganda with our letter of the week.
Patricia Namdi from Uganda writes, the Darfur Women Action Group should encourage Sudanese women to join the security force and provide security to the nation, especially to protect women and children. This will give them an upper hand in fighting for their own rights. Wars affect mainly women and children. Politics in Sudan should be dominated by women who want peace. The political greed of men has caused chaos for South Sudan. Sudanese women should enlighten their husbands about the importance of peace.
Well, that was Patricia Namdi in Kampala. And before we move on to more of your comments, I'd like to thank you for using all our social media platform to communicate to us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOADWAG as basically the group. And if you haven't yet, do follow us on Twitter. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Emmanuel Kachele, who writes that the group's efforts are appreciated, but selfish politicians are there to block their moves. Another tweet from Kula Herbert Wairagara Jr. From Uganda tweets this. He says that the women should take up political leadership positions such that they can have a say in the decisions for Sudan. Well, now to a comment from a Facebook follower, Moses Loshan, in Nigeria, who kind of echoes the previous tweet and says that women should take over leadership of the Darfur region to ensure a lasting peace. Well, Shaka and guests, what do you say to these comments?
Your reaction. Nimat?
Well, I cannot agree more with our contributor, and thank you so much for that. That's what we are fighting for. Our focus is to empower the affected communities by the crisis, but women empowerment is our core priority. And we believe women are the 50% of any nation's population. And in the case of Darfur, women make up the overwhelming majority of those who are living in camps, whether it is internally displaced camps or refugees camps in the neighboring country. And so women serve as leaders and healers and a spokesperson for their communities. They kept their communities together and they took more leadership role. And unfortunately, they are the most affected, but the least involved. And that is why we strongly believe that we invite our contributor and our supporters to help us to speak to policymakers and those who are trying to bring peace to Darfur or Sudan, that unless women are in the table, no peace can be sustainable. In order for us to resolve the crisis sustainably, women have to be integrated in every single step from the planning, implementation, monitoring, and evaluation. And the conflict resolution is the most important part, because not just women, because they are affected, but women know as community issues. And women issues are not just women issues. It is community issues. It is an issue that affects every single family and our society. And thus, women participation is extremely important, and that is what we are fighting for, trying to empower more women, to give women voice, and also empower those who are historically excluded from participating in shaping the social, political, and economic aspect of the Sudanese life.
Nimat, I think your point is well made. Yeah. Mariama, do you have more social media reaction from the audience, please?
Yes, we'll go to another comment from Loti Soko in Zambia, who writes that women should unite with love and prayers, then the men will learn from their actions. While we added, let's take a look at another comment, still from one of our Facebook followers. This time it's Zakaria Mwefwani from Tanzania, who writes that to attain lasting peace, the women of Darfur must have more opportunities to go to school and promote education on human suffrage. In other words, a person's right to vote. Women will then have the chance to elect a president who will enhance the growth of democracy as well as human freedom. Very interesting comment. Once again, what do you make of these ones?
Nimat, once again, it's all yours, but my other question, of course, is how come we are not getting any social media reaction from Darfur or any part of Sudan so far?
This is a very good question.
That's
unfortunately,
question.
The internet in Sudan is very restricted by the government. And in days like today that you announced that we will be in the studio here speaking, in most cases, the server will be put down.
Really?
So the people of Darfur have no access to internet. Only if a few offices, if some of the international organization and some of the government offices, but the public have no access to independent internet. So the internet and the phone companies are manipulated by the regime in Sudan. So they have the freedom to turn it off and on at any time. So unfortunately, with all the technology and the globalization, the people of Darfur remain isolated, and that is the strategy used by the government of Sudan, unfortunately.
Very interesting. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. If you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com, or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter @VOA Shaka. Another reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa program page, a TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Well, now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll look at the role of the Washington, D.C. Mayor's Office of African Affairs. We'll discuss the impact of the office as it seeks to improve the quality of life for the District of Columbia's diverse African-born population. That's next, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back to our discussion and analysis on the root causes and the possible solutions on the conflict in the Western Sudanese region of Darfur. Our distinguished guest is Nimmat Ahmadi, founder and president of the Darfur Women Action Group, based here in Washington, D.C. We invited the Sudanese ambassador to the United States to provide the government's position, but due to circumstances beyond his control, he was unable to join us. Well, I have to come back to you again, Nimmat, and frankly to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to finally host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Likewise, it's my pleasure, and I have been a big fan of the show, and I'm happy to be with you here today.
Well, I have to say that your compliments are very, very hugely appreciated. Let me ask you a question now. When were you last in Darfur, Nimmat?
Unfortunately, I was in Darfur 10 years ago, and I haven't been able to go back to Darfur.
Are you concerned about some critics who might say, wait a minute, Nimmat, you have not been on the soil. You have already talked about how it is very difficult to know what is happening there, especially given that the government of Khartoum makes sure that journalists do not access the area. They take care of the social media and all of those types of communications. How do you feel when someone says you are simply making a lot of noise from Washington, thousands of miles away, and that perhaps some of the things, frankly, you are saying are not reflected on the ground?
Well, you are true. Many people can say that, especially those who are committing the crime in Darfur. But to tell you the truth, I left Darfur because of Darfur, and I remain in a very close contact with internal displaced people, mm-hmm. with people in the villages, in the cities, human rights defenders, human rights activists, journalists, women leaders, mm-hmm. and everyone who's affected and concerned about what has been going on. This is my 24/7 job.
How do you interact with them?
Well, I interact with them. It may not be advisable to tell you in the show, mm-hmm. but believe me, I'm
just give
in
us a
very,
sense.
A sense. There are emails, there are phones, and there are news coming out from Darfur, but also we have direct contact. And the same people who have been doing the same work when I was on the ground, we were actively monitoring and documenting the atrocities in Darfur. And it's not just me, but there are thousands of people who are doing that for the sake of the survival of their own people.
What kind of impact have you had so far on the region? Because I say that really advisedly, perhaps because I know, for example, that when your name is mentioned in this city, where some of the most important decisions that affect most people globally are made, there are a lot of people, frankly, who do not feel comfortable sharing the desk with you.
Well, that's absolutely true, because the only reason I survived the genocide in Darfur, just to tell the truth. And you know that if you tell the truth, then you lose friends. Mm-hmm. You don't have friends.
There is a saying.
You may have a few friends who they share you the values and the principle, but especially most people who have the power to change the situation, mm-hmm. and they fail to do their job, they will be very careful if they know that I am going to speak up, because they know that I will point out their weaknesses, their shortcomings, And for those who are doing what has been going on in Darfur, they're very careful, because I speak from the point of truth, and I speak with evidence, with facts, and there is no way that they can challenge what I am saying, because it is true, and it just speak the truth. And when you dare to tell the truth to power, you should be ready to lose friends and not to be welcome in many places. But also, I am proud to say that there are many more people who appreciate what I have been doing, who are very supportive, including some officials and diplomats and people from those who make policy, because they feel I'm doing what I am supposed to do. And today, Darfur Women Action Group is the only organization that talk about the genocide in Darfur.
Are you, do you feel comfortable when someone tells you that the greatest friend of the truth is time, and her greatest enemy is ignorance or prejudice, while her constant companion is humility?
Yeah, I feel very happy when I hear that, because I know it's all only about the time when all come to agree with you, but sometimes for some people it's too late. So time, as Martin Luther King said, time is always right to do the right thing. And I feel every day if I can do one thing that is right, that make me feel comfortable about myself, and I don't want to be... I don't care about what other people think of me. I want to be fair to myself. I want to be honest, and I want to do what can help, even if can save one person's life, because I'm lucky to be safe here in the United States. Mm. And I think this is the least, and it is less than 1% of what I can pay back to my community.
But if you cannot, for example, interact with government officials, and I'm talking about Sudanese government officials, mm-hmm. and some in the international community, for example, to really have a civilized debate, how do you hope at some point in time to resolve the problems in your homeland?
Well, I think to resolve the problem, you can sit even with your enemies. But they don't come to the platforms where I speak. It's not only me, but there are many more people who speak the truth about what they have been doing.
Why? What do they fear?
And they fear because we speak about accountability. In Darfur, in Sudan, you cannot achieve peace without accountability. When genocide has been committed, when women are raped in masses, today people can sign a peace agreement. But what peace means to a woman who have no ambitions but to be confident and integrate herself back to her community?
So
to
do you
feel that her plight is recognized.
So do you believe, do you agree with some people who say that you really cannot talk about peace unless there is, one, accountability, two, social economic justice for all, and perhaps three, reconciliation?
Well, yes, if you are going to be realistic, these are very integral part of each other, and we cannot talk about sustainable peace without accountability, without economic empowerment, without social coexistence and reconciliation. And speaking about reconciliation, which is very important part of the bringing people back to normal, if there is no accountability, there will not be reconciliation. People can say, yes, we can go back, but they still, you want people who feel that it's not just punishing the perpetrator, but acknowledging the harm done to them. And also ensure that you can prevent this in the future. If you have rule of law, you have accountability in place, you are not talking about now, you are talking about future. Mm. And most people, they are hopeful. Even though they have been devastated, they want to know that they have a better future.
What kind of resources are found in Darfur? Because there are people that have suggested that the reason really you have violence in that particular area is not because of different ethnic communities. It's not because of anything else, but it's about resources. Resources in the neighborhood. What exactly do you have there? Do you have gold? Do you have zinc, uranium? What do you have?
Well, Darfur is very, very rich of resources. We have gold. We have uranium. There is all kind of natural resources that have not yet been explored, and we have oil. But the government of Sudan don't want to tell about this because there may be other people who will care more about Darfur. But also, the ethnic and the racial targeting is one of the main aspects of the targeting of the population in Darfur. This government wants to reduce the number and change the demography of the people. If you see the way they are targeting people, they when they rape women, they tell them, you should be happy that you will have an Arab child.
Really?
An African, proud African woman, you tell them this, how damaging it is. So it is in their narrative. It's not just in their act, but it is in their narrative how they took.
That is very interesting because the late Hassan al-Turabi, used in fact tell me that he was not an Arab, but that he was an Afro-Arab. Hassan al-Turabi himself.
Well,
let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. I gather there are some people waiting to ask you a couple of questions. Good evening, Samuel from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Ndugushaka. Sorry, how are you?
Usually terrific. How are you today?
Very terrific. Let me move to the panelist, Niamata Amadi. Madam, are you in a position to welcome the possibility of deploying United Nations peacekeeping force to ensure peace and stability in Darfur? What would you like the international donor countries to do in terms of aid and infrastructure innovation without strings attached? All yours, madam.
Thank you,
Shaka.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Ghana. Good evening, Tafa. You're most welcome, Straight Talk Africa.
Hello, good evening, Shaka.
Terrific, man. You have a minute. Terrific. How are you?
Thank you very much, Shaka. My regard to our guests in the studio. And quick question. If you look at Darfur, you are talking about a region that is the size of France. Is it not the time for people from Darfur to start also fighting for their independence? Since the Sudan government is not helping them, is doing everything possible to isolate them. I think it's the time for us to start talking about
Thank you. Let's go to Patrick from Nigeria.
Yeah, give me Mr. Shaka, give me Madam. That's Patrick Crawford. Madam, my question is, Madam, is it possible for a woman to stand as the president of Darfur? I'm asking this question because 65% of voters across the continent are women, and our women should help and guide against child soldiers and see how they can help the IDPs deal. Because at the IDP camp, there are a lot of Kwashiorkors in the camp there. Is it possible?
Thank you. It's all yours.
Well, thank you so much for your questions. And I'm going to start with our first contributor. I am not, in terms of the peacekeeping mission in Darfur, I'm not in opposition. I have welcomed that, and million of Darfurs have welcomed, but our concern is that we want to see the mission operate effectively and take it, implement its mandate as it is. And also, because there is a lot of money have been put, so I think these countries who are the troop contributing countries and those who are contributing in financing the troop operation should be able to hold the mission accountable. Because if you deploy a mission and you see the mission don't take responsibility of doing their job, then you have to hold the leadership of that mission accountable. And also you have to hold the United Nations accountable because people contributed their own troop. These are people, soldiers who are dying there.
Yeah. Somebody asked you about whether, in fact, you would like your part to be independent. You had a referendum earlier this year. What do you think about the referendum that changes the status quo?
Well, calling for independence of Darfur. It is in the table for the people of Darfur to decide. Unfortunately, the referendum that has been conducted by the government of Sudan in April of this year, it was not according to the will of the people of Darfur. The people of Darfur have not been able to participate. This is the government in sponsored, planned, and implemented referendum. But for my brother from Ghana, yes, the people of Darfur have the right to choose. If they choose to have their independence, instead of fighting each other, it is better to live in peace, and that's in the table.
So the results of the last referendum, really, one could say, were reflections of a sort of creative accounting by Khartoum?
Yes.
I see. Let me talk to us about the upcoming 5th Annual National Symposium on Women and Genocide in the 21st Century, specifically the case of Darfur.
The annual symposium on women and genocide, it takes us back to our last contributor's question that, well, women can lead. And because the reason we established this symposium is that the decline of attention on Darfur and also how the conflict and the genocide in Darfur affected women, and the role played by women on the ground at different level. So, unfortunately, even within the anti-genocide movement, the people who are advocating, it is very easy for them to speak about how many people have been killed, how many villages destroyed, how many properties have been looted. It is disappointing that they don't have data, an accurate a statistic on how many women have been assaulted or raped, even though rape has been used as a weapon of war. And the second reason is that also women have not only been victims, but they have been leaders and contributed so much to keeping their communities together and keeping the people of Darfur together as of today, and becoming a spokesperson for their people, and have been working day and night. There are civil society, local community-based organizations who have been aiding the needy in the camps, but that has not been recognized at international level. But we also meant to host this conference to bring policymakers, academics, advocates, and to make sure that people understand, in order for you to end genocide, to end atrocities, you have to empower the affected communities first. And within the empowerment of the affected communities, women empowerment should be the core. And that is why we created this platform for people to continue to engage our supporters, to continue to bring the attention on Darfur to the attention of the policymakers, and also to bring women from the crisis situation. This is not just from Darfur.
Any particular reason why you gave me the honor to moderate this symposium, even though I can't, unfortunately? 10 seconds.
Well, because I really appreciate your program, and I appreciate you as a capable, competent journalist who always speaks the truth, and I would love to have the opportunity to have you at the symposium.
Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. And on that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Nimmat Ahmadi, founder and president of the Darfur Women Action Group, based here in Washington, D.C., who invited the Sudanese ambassador to the United States to provide a government position, but he was unable to join us. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of the Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Darfur. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.